time was again.
Naylor. Glam Naylor.
Oh, I've never been out with a doctor before. Still, you know how to give a girl a good time. I'll say that for you.
I'm pleased you've enjoyed yourself, my dear.
Where are we going? I don't live down here.
It's quieter this way.
Oh, yeah. Well, that depends what you're up to, doesn't it? Well, you going to kiss me then, Nora? Or do you want to?
I was wondering. How do you feel now?
How do I? Stuff you give me to the trick, all right?
Good. I think perhaps you'd better have some more.
Ooh, no, I don't need any more. I feel all right, I tell you.
Come along now. Mm. Doctor's orders.
Ooh. Well, in that case...
That's better.
This stuff around with, yeah?
I get headaches myself.
Oh, well, it's a good thing you're a doctor, eh? I mean, if you can't look after yourself, who can you look after, eh? Now then, wasn't you about to do something?
I have to go now.
What do you mean?
Shall we meet tomorrow?
Oh, Ian, don't go!
About 7 o'clock? The three fairs?
Oh, but what about... God. Silly old sod. Might as well go home, I suppose. God.
Present William Chubb as Sherlock Holmes and Crawford Logan as Dr. Watson in The Adventure of the Pimlico Poisoner.
As a medical man, the great affection in which I have always held my friend Sherlock Holmes is clouded only by the complete disregard he had for his physical well-being. However, I have chronicled such circumstances far too often for my readers not to be aware of a remarkable constitution which, despite frequent abuse, sustained him through periods of intense mental and physical exertion that would have wrecked many a lesser being. Nevertheless, the late summer of 91 was one of those rare occasions when the criminal element of our great metropolis had good reason to breathe more easily and operate with comparative impunity. For Sherlock Holmes, the world's first consulting detective, scourge of their nefarious professions, blight on their illegal activities, was convalescing.
Watson? Would you be so good as to shut the window?
Of course. Sorry, old boy. Didn't realize you were in a draft. Should have spoken up sooner. Can't have you taking a chill, can we?
Shh.
Something wrong?
A moment, Watson. Yes, definitely. 5/16 of an inch.
5/16.
Over a gap of 5/32
of an inch. What are you doing, Holmes?
Just an experiment. By listening to the noise that my knuckle makes when I strike this wretched cast of mine, I can establish its precise thickness at any given point. Well, you see where I've managed to scrape a hole through the plaster with my pocket knife?
Yes.
That was my reference, a standard to which I could work. Now, after considerable practice, I can not only tell you if there is a gap between flesh and casing, but precisely what that gap is, give or take a 32nd of an inch.
Really? Any particular reason for this?
Well, either the plaster or my flesh has contracted.
I meant, is there any scientific reason for your experimentation?
None whatsoever.
Then, if you don't mind my asking, just why?
Because I'm bored, Watson. For 5 weeks, I have lain on this couch waiting for my broken limb to heal. 5 weeks of stagnation, impotence, frustration, and boredom.
Oh. It hasn't been easy, you know. I've done my best to amuse you.
My dear Watson, please forgive me. You have worked miracles, and I couldn't be in better hands. And, of course, my present predicament was entirely of my own making.
You mustn't blame yourself. It was an accident, old boy. Could have happened to anyone.
To descend in haste from a hansom cab in pursuit of justice is understandable. To do so without checking a pavement was available, the height of stupidity.
Let's see if we can't find something to occupy you then. Read the personal column yet?
Twice.
Well, how about the game of cards?
You know my views on that particularly mindless pastime.
I don't know what to do for you, Holmes, I'm sure.
In which case, might I suggest you go down to Mrs. Hudson's cellar, where you may find a brazen bit amongst the tools she keeps there.
Brazen bit? What on earth for?
I have a mind to test my plaster cast hypothesis.
You mean to drill through?
Can you think of a better way of verifying my measurement?
I forbid it. You could do yourself all kinds of damage.
Perhaps a little pain would prove diverting.
Really, Holmes?
Just my joke, Watson. You're quite right, of course. I shall just have to wait until the cast is removed. Which is in 2 weeks, I believe.
Three.
Then, in the meantime, I had better put in some target practice. Pass my revolver, would you? I fancy SH on the wall over there would be the most effective decoration.
Mrs. Hudson warned you about that last time.
Aha! The threat of eviction. Most unlikely. I really am an excellent tenant. Besides, what better protection than having one of the best marksmen in London under your roof whilst you sleep? All right, no target practice. Then, I'm afraid, Watson, there's nothing for it. It'll have to be the syringe.
No.
Be good enough to pass it to me, would you?
I don't know where it is.
In the chimney where you put it.
How do you know?
Perfectly simple.
There was soot on my hand.
You're far too wily an old bird for that.
What then?
A purely natural reaction to my mentioning the word syringe. You glanced at the chimney.
I'm not going to fetch it for you.
Quite right. Why should you encourage me in such an abominable practice? Which means I shall have to fetch it for myself. Hand me my stick, would you?
No.
You really wish to see me crawl to my addiction? Ah, a reprieve.
Yes.
For both of us.
Just what you need, Holmes. Visitor.
I doubt it.
Lestrade, perhaps.
Shouldn't think so.
Your brother, then?
Mycroft never leaves the Diogenes Club.
I'm sure it's someone for you.
I hope you're right. For both our sakes.
Good morning, Mrs. Hudson.
Oh, they take your breath away, they do.
Thought I heard a ring at the door.
Oh, gentleman to see Mr. Holmes. Gave me his card.
Thank you. Ask him to come up, would you?
Oh, very well.
It is someone for you, Holmes.
The butcher, the baker, or the candlestick maker?
His card.
Let me see. Well, now, Earl M. Klein, detective. Do you think he wishes to consult me, Watson?
Undoubtedly.
An unusual name. Yet I cannot recall Mr. Klein in any investigative capacity.
You will see him.
Of course. Who knows what diversion the possessor of such an unusual name may provide.
Notwithstanding my delight that here at last was some possible stimulation for Holmes' extraordinary mind, I could not help feeling a certain apprehension as our visitor came up the stairs to meet me. Well over 6 feet in height, heavily built, with a massive lower jaw that protruded in an aggressive fashion. Despite a thick, luxuriant moustache, he was almost totally bald, with just a few strands of limp, gingerish-colored hair that hung down over the back of his neck like a fringe. To complete this bizarre appearance, his spectacles had been fitted with darkened lenses, thus making it impossible to determine the true expression of his countenance.
You must be Dr. Watson.
Indeed, sir.
I have been looking forward to meeting you for many years.
Oh?
America is not so far away that we haven't heard of Sherlock Holmes's most able assistant. Delighted to make your acquaintance.
And I yours, Mr. Klein.
And where is the great man?
In here,
if you would care to...
With pleasure.
Mr. Klein.
Forgive me if I don't get up.
Not at all. Sherlock Holmes, I am honored, sir. Honored to meet the greatest man in our profession. Let me shake you by the hand.
A pleasure to meet you, Mr. Klein.
But one that hardly matches mine, sir. Why, you are a legend, a living legend.
You have been in England long?
Less than a month. I would have come sooner, but... well, professional duties, I'm sure you understand.
Of course. Do take a seat, Mr. Klein.
Why, thank you, sir. Would you gentlemen mind if I smoke?
Not at all. A habit I often indulge in myself.
Yes. You'll find an ashtray on the table beside you.
Thank you.
I see you smoke McCracken's number 2 leaf. A little mild for my taste.
Mr. Holmes, you amaze me. This cigarette came from my case. How on earth did
Every
you...
profession has its store of secrets, Mr. Klein. Oh, but of course, you are well aware of that. Now, what was it you wished to see me about? I presume it is a professional matter.
Indeed it is, sir. And if you permit me, I'll come straight to the point. No sense in beating about the bush, as they say.
Quite.
The Pimlico murders.
What about them?
A nasty business.
Undoubtedly.
2 murders within a week and a few hundred yards of each other.
To the point, Mr. Clark.
Public confidence in the official force is low. There are rumors that we have another Jack the Ripper on our hands.
So what is your proposition?
You're ahead of me, Mr. Holmes. But I would expect no less. My proposition is this. We work together. We solve the Pimlico murders, bring the criminal to justice, and share in the generous fees your government will willingly pay to have this matter resolved.
You flatter me, Miss Klein. But you must be aware that I already have the good doctor here as my partner. I must, therefore, decline.
Come now, Holmes. This is exactly the opportunity you've been waiting for.
I think I may be the best judge of where my best opportunities lie, Watson.
Surely. With Mr. Klein out in the field, as it were, and you here to contribute analysis and deduction, why?
We'd have the rope round the villain's neck in no time at all.
Exactly.
Well, Holmes, what do you say?
Simply this. Be kind enough to shut the door as you leave.
For one agonizing moment, I feared the American detective was steeling himself to spring at Holmes. His huge hands whitened against the wooden arms of his chair, and his lips tightened into a malevolent, bloodless slit. I was reminded of the deadly reptiles I had encountered during my Afghan service and began to calculate the time it would take me to cross the room to the drawer in which I kept my old service revolver.
Very well, Mr. Holmes. Have it your way. I'm sure we will meet again.
I'd say there was no doubt of that, Mr. Clyde. By the way, do you intend to resume your walk in the park when you leave here?
How on earth did
Had you been lying in the same prone position as myself, you would undoubtedly have observed the traces of damp grass and leaves that have adhered to the soles of your boots. The pavements of our capital streets are not noted for their vegetation. Good day to you.
Splendid, Mr. Holmes. Splendid. Your reputation is fully justified. Should you change your mind, please be good enough to contact me through the personal column of the Times. You know, I almost wish I was not on the side of law and order. You would make a splendid adversary.
Strange fellow.
And a somewhat dangerous one, I shouldn't wonder.
Really?
Certainly no more a detective than Mrs. Hudson, a surgeon. Although when you consider the way she wields the knife when cutting our Sunday roast, perhaps I do her an injustice.
She's an imposter, then.
Most certainly. That the possessor of such a singular appearance should choose to enter a profession where anonymity can be considered a distinct advantage is doubtful. That he should fail to see how I could deduce that he smoked the Kraken's number 2 leaf, highly questionable. And that the only way he can be contacted is via the personal column of the Times, utterly preposterous.
Yes, I had my doubts. I must say, Holmes, he was impressed by that cigarette business.
Perfectly simple.
Or to you, perhaps. Perhaps you'd care to...
In my experience, American visitors to this country invariably prefer to smoke American cigarettes. As far as I'm aware, the only stockists of American cigarettes in London are Mulrain and Forsyth in Regent Street.
And the only brand they stock is McCracken No. 2 Leaf. Well?
Oh, yes. As you say, perfectly simple.
So, Watson, it seems we have something worthy of our talents at last.
The Pimlico murders. But I thought a few days ago you didn't seem particularly interested.
That was before we met Mr. Earl M. Klein.
Oh, I see. That is, no, I don't see.
You know my methods, Watson. Use them. And I recommend that you start from the premise that Mr. Klein may not be all that he seems. In the meantime, perhaps you would be so kind as to remind me of the facts of these Pimlico killings again. I presume you still have the newspaper clippings?
Yes, yes, they're over here. Ready for filing.
Then you have my undivided attention. Please proceed.
Well, now. It would seem that on the evening of 13th of October last, Ellen Dodsworth, aged 19, was seen strolling along the Vauxhall Bridge Road. Suddenly she pitched forward onto the pavement as if paralyzed. On being taken to her rooms, she developed convulsions and began screaming in agony. During the brief intervals of her torment, she gave a somewhat garbled account of being given a drink out of a bottle with white stuff in it by a tall man in a top hat earlier that evening. She died before reaching St. Thomas's Hospital, and the subsequent analysis of the contents of her stomach revealed the presence of strychnine. Not very pleasant, eh, Holmes? Holmes?
The facts of the second murder, Watson.
Very well. That took place, four nights later in the Belgrave Road. Before her death, the victim, who's not yet been named, also referred to a tall man, a silk hat, and a bottle of white stuff from which he had encouraged her to drink. She was able to add, however, that the man had described himself as a doctor. And had peculiar cross eyes. The cause of death was later established as strychnine poison. What are the police doing to catch this fiend? Has Jack the Ripper re-emerged in Pimlico, that sort of thing? I'm afraid that's all, Holmes. Not much to go on.
You surprise me, Watson.
How's that?
Based on what we know, I have already explored several speculative avenues, some of which need only the addition of a few facts to establish their validity.
Really? How did you,
Mr. Klein! Consider this, Watson. Why should an individual with such an obviously high regard for his own abilities invite me to be his partner against crime? And while you are considering, perhaps you would be so kind as to open our door to the visitor who rang a few moments ago. I hear his steps on the stairs.
It's funny how you can go for days without a caller and then... Oh, Lestrade, good morning.
Morning, Doctor.
Do come in, Inspector.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Holmes. How's the leg today?
Still weighed down by the wonders of modern surgery, but hardly worth the mention. After all, men of our profession rely more on mind than limb. Although there are occasions when the latter can be useful.
Oh, yes, whatever you say, Mr. Holmes. Though I wouldn't like to be without the use of one of my pins, I can tell you.
Then why not rest them on that chair whilst you tell me the purpose of your visit?
Thank you.
Not another Pimlico poisoning, I trust?
Oh, far from it, Mr. Holmes. Almost wish that were the case. At least it might give us a clue and put us on the track of these madmen.
If I can be of any assistance, you know you only have to ask.
Yes. But the truth is, I just don't know which way to turn. We're no nearer catching the poisoner than we are flying to the moon. The trouble is, the longer it goes on, the more likely it is there'll be people trying to copy him. It always happens. The public want results. They want him caught.
How can I be of service? Do you have any new information?
We still only know what's been reported by the press, and that's scant enough. I tell you, Mr. Holmes, we're dealing with the most dangerous type of criminal here. A maniac with no motive. And there's no telling when he's going to strike again.
Then, between us, Lestrade, we will do our best to ensure that will not occur. You have my word on that.
Oh, Thank you, Mr. Holmes. I don't suppose... what I'm trying to say is...
You want to know if I've come to any conclusions concerning the Pimlico poisoning?
Exactly.
Nothing definite as yet, Lestrade. But I have certainly formulated an opinion. And if that opinion can be substantiated by fact, then I believe we may be able to flush your maniac out into the open.
Well...
I take it I can rely on your full cooperation.
The whole force is at your disposal, Mr. Holmes. You've only to say the word.
Which may come sooner than you think.
We'll be ready.
Excellent.
Right. Well, I'll say good day then, and once again, thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Watson will see you out.
Oh, there was something else. This note came in this morning. That's from a crank, of course. Get them all the time on this sort of case. I thought you might find it amusing.
Thank you, Lestrade. A little diversion would be most welcome.
Yes. I'll see you out then.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Well, good day to you, Lestrade.
Thank you, Dr. Watson. Good day.
Hey, you cheered him up, Holmes.
Well, our man certainly has the cheek of the devil. Lestrade was right about our dealing with a maniac. Listen to this. I am willing to give you such assistance as will bring the murderer of both Ellen Dodsworth and Matilda Clover to justice, providing your government is willing to pay me £100,000.
Good heavens.
I know his identity. Yours faithfully, Liam Lenter, consulting detective. What do you make of that, Watson?
I'd say you'd better watch out for yourself, Holmes. Too many consulting detectives can't be good for business, huh?
Nothing like healthy competition, Watson. Even from a murderer.
You mean... It's not one of them. But how do you know?
Again, apply my method. There can be no doubt about it.
Very well. Let's see now. Common enough paper. Could have been purchased at any one of 100 stationers.
The name, Watson. What do you make of that?
Liam Lenter. Bogus, of course. Probably Irish.
Look at this. I've written the name Liam Lenter on my cast. So much more convenient than one's shirt cuff. And underneath, Earl M. Klein, the other detective. They are, of course, one and the same person. No doubt you see the connection now.
I'm not sure.
Even when I point out there are the same number of letters, 10 in each name?
I see. So has John Watson. Mm-hmm. And I doubt if even you could find a connection between Klein, Lenter and myself.
Touché, Watson. And an apology. I can hardly expect your mind to be filled with the sort of trivia I have been foolish enough to cram into mine. Let me explain. Horatio Nelson, for example. In anagrammatic form, he could be read as Honor Est Ar Nilo. Similarly, Flit on Cheering Angel is the relatively simple transposition of Florence Nightingale. Now do you see?
Yes, of course, an anagram. Liam Lenter, Earl M. Klein, one and the same. No doubt about it.
Quite so. But of even greater significance is the intriguing possibility that both may be derived from the real name of the person responsible for these Pimlico poisonings.
But he was here. In this very chair. Why didn't we apprehend him?
Well, I am hardly in a position to apprehend anyone. And despite your proven courage, Watson... I feel you are no match for our adversary's undoubtedly superior strength. Besides, at the time, I was still not sure he was our man, despite his darkened lenses and the reference by one of the victims to a man with cross eyes.
But you are sure now?
Oh, yes. The letter from Liam Lenter, Earl M. Klein's alter ego, refers to the second victim by name when that had been specifically withheld from the press. However Lestrade failed to spot that, I shall never know.
So... First error on the part of the murderer.
Oh, hardly an error, Watson. We are dealing with an arrogant and dangerous man. Very dangerous indeed. And one who wants to play games. Very well. We shall
oblige him.
It was obvious that the key to the murderer's true identity lay in devising further anagrams from the letters of the names he had already utilized. So, for the next few minutes, we busied ourselves, Holmes on his plaster cast and I on a page from my pocketbook, in compiling a list of all the forenames we could extract from those letters. Alec, Len, Ian, and so on. At each name, Holmes would concentrate for a few moments, comparing it with some mental list he had stored away. But as each, in turn, failed to register in that immense filing cabinet locked in his brain, I began to suspect that, for once, he was pursuing a false trail. However, as we began working on permutations that began with the letter N, and I myself had got no further than N-E...
We have him, Watson! Neil! Double L. Neil Creed.
Quickly now. Pass me the index.
I realized at once that Holmes had been able to make the vital connection by relating the name to some press cutting he had filed away concerning the man. I knew that the entry of Neil Cream into that vast index of people and events could only be for something sensational.
Now, let me see. Campbell, the St. Albans Strangler, and Cochran. Wonderful forger, that man. A true artist. Cracksman. Cradley. Here we are. Cream. Yes. Now I remember.
What's that, Holmes?
A series of newspaper items that make up a veritable catalogue of crime. A potpourri of poisoning, you might say. Listen to this. September 1870. Edmonton, Alberta. Fellow student, Emily Baxter, found dead in Cream's room. Autopsy, traces of strychnine. Verdict, suicide. 1874, February, McGill College, Montreal. Having qualified as a doctor. What do you think of that, Watson?
It would never have happened in my day.
Having qualified as a doctor, body of waitress, five months pregnant. Found behind surgery, bottle of chloroform beside her. Verdict, administered by some person unknown.
Extraordinary. Fellow had the luck of the devil.
January 1881, advertised revolutionary cure for epilepsy, seduced wife of sufferer when she came to surgery, sent her home, husband died 3 weeks later, strychnine poison.
Why, the man's a maniac. How could they possibly set him free after that?
It seems they didn't. Illinois Gazette, 13th July 1881, poisoner given life sentence. Following a trial lasting for 17 days, Neil Cream was found guilty of murder and sentenced to imprisonment for life in the Illinois State Penitentiary. Rejecting prosecuting counsel's demand for the death penalty, Judge Josiah P. Fairweather stated there was reasonable doubt as to whether the fatal dose had actually been administered by Cream.
That's our man, Watson.
Hardly, old chap. Not when he's serving life imprisonment several thousand miles away.
Then he's either escaped or been set free. Either way, Neil Cream is here in London. I'd stake my reputation on it.
Well, I suppose so.
Would you mind playing errand boy, Watson?
No, of course not.
Then I have two tasks for you. Firstly, go to Scotland Yard, present my compliments to Inspector Lestrade, and ask him to send an official cable to the Governor of Illinois State Penitentiary inquiring after the present whereabouts of Neil Cream.
Right, I'll go straight away. Put my coat on. A bit of a nip in the air. Where else do you want me to go, Holmes? Holmes?
How do you think Alec would suit me?
I don't quite follow.
Yeah, Alec. Well, it doesn't carry quite the same weight as Sherlock, of course, but I like it.
That leaves N-I-L-R-E-M. Milner.
Alec Milner. What do you think, Watson?
Is that another of those anagrams?
Indeed it is.
Well, how about Alec Merlin?
Merlin? Capital, Watson. The name has certain magical properties which may well work in our favour. Yes, Alec Merlin. Your pocketbook, Watson. Unless you'd rather take this plaster cast of mine all the way to the offices of the Times.
Oh, I see. No, of course not. There you are.
Thank you. Now then, O.M. Klein, need demonstration of your abilities. Lupus Street. 10 o'clock tonight.
What?
Alec Merlin. Oh, there. That should flush him out. Make sure that gets into tomorrow's personal column, would you? Oh, and, Watson, ask Lestrade if he could possibly spare me some time this afternoon. We have some arrangements to make before we meet Mr. Neil Cream again.
You warm enough, Holmes.
Perfectly.
I can't have you going down with a chill. Certainly the night for it. Pity they can't come up with a way of heating these cabs. Are you sure you wouldn't like another rug?
Do stop fussing, Watson.
I'm just looking after my patient. Would have thought you'd have learned to put up with it by now. Simon Horsath.
And who might he be?
No one, really. Well, no one in particular. Another of those anagrams.
Well, certainly not of Neil Cream.
My name, actually.
Really? Simon Horsath? John H. Watson? You have the better of me, old boy.
No. I omitted the John and used my middle name. The H stands for Hamish.
How very interesting. What time is it?
It's about 7 minutes to 10.
Oh. Can you see anything in the street?
Quiet as the grave. Mind you, can't see that much of it. Damn fog. Not the sort of night to be out and about. Perhaps even Cream will think better of it.
He's here already, Watson.
Where?
Out there, in Looper Street. I know he is. I feel it.
I don't see how you can be so sure, old boy. I mean, he might not even have looked at the personal column today.
Impossible.
I suppose you know your man, Holmes. Mind you, you were right about his being here in England. Released from the penitentiary less than a month ago. Good behavior of all things. I didn't hear.
Your revolver, Watson.
It's all right, Sonny Lestrade. Had me a bit worried there.
Well, Lestrade?
Nothing to report, Mr. Holmes.
No sign of him, then?
Not much sign of anyone. A bit too quiet for my liking. Fog doesn't help either. Seemed to be a right peace super.
I take it you're ready for him.
I've been for the last half hour, Mr. Holmes. 20 of my best men all armed. Plus Constable Billings, your driver.
They're well hidden?
I had a job finding them myself, and I knew where they were. Pity it had to be Looper Street, though. Must be one of the longest in London.
Anything less, and he might not have taken the bait.
You, think you'll show then?
Without question.
But when? That's what I'd like to know.
5 minutes' time. I said 10 o'clock, and I don't think Mr. Cream would be one to disappoint me.
Well, we're ready for him. I feel lucky, Mr. Holmes. You wish he'd never set foot in this country by that time.
Good God!
He's here! I knew it!
Fast as you can, Billings!
Right that way, mate! Coming from down there.
Hold on, Lestrade!
All right,
I'm all right. Just hope we're in time.
Your man's certainly punctual, Holmes. Even early.
Possibly a little too early, Watson. There they are. Outside the Three Feathers.
Whoa, stay there.
At least there's some light down there.
Careful, Lestrade.
That's a bit reckless of him, that.
He sees an end to his troubles, Watson.
Oh, yes, but I don't want 2 broken legs on my hands. I'll go and see what's happening. Now, you stay where you are, Holmes.
I must see for myself.
You're not leaving this camp.
For heaven's sake, Watson.
There'll be no argument. You're staying here. I'll be as quick as I can. What's happening, Lestrade?
Eh? Doctor. This woman here.
No good.
Sergeant, what for?
Sir, move this crowd back. I can't hear myself think. Well, that's better. Now then, this is Jeannie Thompson. Says she come out of the pub there and started walking down. Oh, well, look, you might as well tell the doctor yourself.
Oh, sir.
You see, I come out into the street.
Speak up, girl.
All right, Lestrade. Now, my dear, tell me your name.
Jeannie, sir. Jeannie Thompson.
All right, Jeannie. You're quite safe now. Just take your time and then tell me exactly what happened.
Well, sir, I've just been in the Three Feathers to get a top for my mother. Ever so poorly she is just now.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, thank you, sir. Well, I come out the door, and just as I was passing the alley there...
Huh?
This man came out and got hold of me.
Can you describe him?
Oh, I don't know, sir. It happened so sudden, I didn't really get a look at him. Ever so big he was, and strong.
How was he dressed?
Oh, I'm not sure, sir. I think he had a cloak. A black cloak.
And then what happened?
Took out his fiddle and played an Irish reel, I shouldn't wonder.
Holmes!
Come here, Miss Thompson.
Really, Holmes?
I said, come here.
Come along now, Jeannie. You better do as he says, and don't be frightened.
Right.
Now, Jeannie Thompson, I have just one question for you.
Yes, sir?
Where is the tot you were taking to your mother?
I must have dropped it.
Then we'd better ask the inspector to find it for you.
No. Sir. Well, perhaps I forgot it, you know.
You mean you forgot the one thing that would bring a modicum of comfort to your poor, sick mother?
Well, I've just forgotten to look for it.
If the truth were known, your mother is probably in excellent health. Now, I want to know who put you up to this.
Who the ogre think you are, then?
Someone who may have you charged with being an accessory to murder.
Horrors.
Murder? Oh, I don't know nothing about that.
Then you'd better tell me what you do know, and be quick about it.
Oh, I met this man, see? In there, about an hour ago. Give me a sovereign, he did. Said he wanted to play us some sort of trick on some friends of his.
What sort of trick?
He didn't say. I was to start screaming just before 10 o'clock. It's all I know. Honest, I didn't know nothing about no murder. Please, you've got to believe me.
I do. But listen to me, Miss Thompson. You've had a very fortunate escape this evening. Very fortunate indeed. A constable will escort you home, yes. Now.
Home? Oh, not yet. No fear. Oh, I need another drink.
Well, Mr. Holmes, seems we missed him this time.
I think not.
Mm-hmm. But, how do you mean?
Listen.
Well?
It's 10 o'clock, Lestrade. The appointed hour.
Tell my men to stand down, Mr. Holmes.
Never mind, Holmes. There's always another day. You'll have the last laugh, I know that.
Thank you, Watson. I have to admit, Cream may well have got the better of us on this occasion. And yet I'm not completely convinced.
Come on.
Did you hear that, Mr. Holmes?
What? He's still here!
Into the cab!
Call him here! Call into the street!
Come on! Come on, then!
This way!
Careful!
Fast as you go! All right, Billy! Quick as you can now! Where you are, sir!
As we sped back down Lupus Street in the direction from which we had come but a few short moments before, I was only too well aware how Holmes would be reproaching himself for having endangered the life of an innocent person in his attempt to catch this fiend. I earnestly prayed that we might at least be in good time to save that life, even if Cream were to make good his escape on this occasion.
The door, Watson! Hurry!
Now, look here, Holmes, that leg of yours.
I take full responsibility! Come on!
Dr. Cross, take 6 men and seal that end of the street.
Any sign of him, Lestrade?
Ah, Mr. Holmes. If he's still here, we'll catch him.
I fear the fog may be in his favor. The victim, is she...
She's all right. Sergeant Wood talks with her.
I must speak...
No, I'd rather you didn't, Mr. Holmes. She's very distressed. Seems our friend tried to force her to drink from his bottle.
His bottle of white stuff, no doubt.
No doubt. Perhaps you'd be so good as to take a look at her, Doctor.
Yes, of course.
But really,
it's for the best, Mr. Holmes. I'll take a full statement from her tomorrow.
You're quite right, Lestrade. I've done enough damage for one evening.
No, Mr. Rome,
I had no right to risk an innocent life.
You were trying to protect a lot more.
I'm not making a particularly good job of it.
You've no reason to reproach yourself. You flushed him out. It's a damn sight more than I was able to do.
But I didn't let him, Lestrade.
Oh, you will, Mr. Holmes. I know you will.
Perhaps.
Ah, everything all right, Doctor?
I think so. No real harm done. She's been through a terrible ordeal, of course, but she's young. Good night's sleep, that's what she needs.
Yeah, I'll get what's ought to see her home. And, perhaps you'd best do the same with Mr. Holmes here.
Eh? All right, yes. Leave him to me.
I'll say good night then, Mr. Holmes. Billings will drive you back to Baker Street. I'll probably stop by in the morning. Unless we catch him tonight, of course. Oh, I'm inclined to agree with you about this fog being in his favour.
Good night, Lestrade. Good
night. Yes, yes. Good night.
Come on then, Holmes. Time we had you tucked up in bed.
I've failed, Watson.
Nonsense.
I've failed because I treated this whole business as a game. A game with Neil Cream as my opponent.
Nothing wrong with playing games, old boy.
Not when you deliberately choose to ignore the stakes. A woman's life, Watson.
But she's alive. She's all right.
This time, it will not happen again.
Come on now, Holmes. In the cab with you. That's it. And don't go taking all the rug this time, eh? Don't want to end up as my own patient. Right-o, Billings. Baker Street. I hope Mrs. Hudson's kept the fire in for us. Holmes?
What was that?
Oh, sorry, old boy. I didn't know you'd nodded off.
No, I was just thinking. What did you say?
I hope there's a fire waiting for us.
Yes.
And I think a nightcap could be in order. Strictly medicinal, of course.
Why have we stopped?
So we have.
You can't be in Baker Street already.
I wouldn't have thought so. Let me see now. Could be anywhere. Hardly see across the street. I'd better ask Billings what's going on. Perhaps he's the one that's dropped off, eh? Billings! I say, Billings!
Good evening, gentlemen.
Good Lord! Scream!
You keep your hands where I can see them, Doctor. I've no doubt a military-looking man such as yourself might well have a revolver to have.
Do as he says, Watson.
Thank you.
What have you done with Billings?
He'll be all right. Most English policemen have thick skulls, I imagine.
When did you take his place?
In Lupus Street. Where else? Can you think of a better way to escape than to become the driver of the illustrious Sherlock Holmes? Consulting detective.
I'd advise you to watch your tongue, sir.
You're hardly in a position to offer me advice, Doctor.
It's all right, Watson. Well, Cream, what do you want of us?
What makes you think I want anything? I have all I want. A dozen or more of Scotland Yard's finest men scouring Pimlico for me, whilst I sit here chatting with the very man they all expect to bring me to justice. Don't you find that amusing, Mr. Holmes?
Not especially. I would remind you that your intended victim is alive and well.
Yes, stupid girl. Couldn't bring herself to drink out of a bottle. But you have to admit that the execution, if you forgive my choice of the word, was excellent. You down one end of Lupus Street, myself down the other. If it is a game we're playing. Oh, yes, I overheard that particular part of your conversation. Then I do seem to be playing it rather well. Don't you think?
The game is not yet over. You will make your mistake yet.
Very doubtful. But consider this, Mr. Holmes. Even in the most unlikely event that I should ever make a mistake, and I am arrested, what good would it do you? You can't prove a thing. And I believe you know that.
Believe me, Cream, I will find a way.
I don't doubt. I'm sure you need all the assistance you can get just now. Good night.
He's got nerve. I'll say that for him.
Most madmen do, Watson.
I don't suppose you want me to try and follow him, do you? You know,
find out where he's hiding up?
I'd prefer not, old friend.
So we just let him walk away, as it were?
Only for the time being. You know, he was right about one thing.
What's that?
As yet, we have no proof that he is the man who has placed half London in the grip of fear.
He's the Pimlico poisoner, all right. We both know that.
Undoubtedly. But I suspect a judge may well take the opposite view.
Surely there's something we can do.
I'm sure there is. And just as surely, we will find it.
Hmm.
Now, Watson, I hope you have a head for heights.
How do you mean?
I'm hardly in a position to climb up into the cabby's seat.
Oh, I see. No, I suppose not. Oh, well. I better get on with it. There. No. How I'm going to find Baker Street in this fog, Lord only knows. Yeah. Come on, then. Gee up.
You are, Watson.
Morning, Holmes.
I was expecting you at least 20 minutes ago.
I thought I'd have a bit of a stroll. Fog's lifted, sun's shining. Wonderful morning.
Telegram for you.
Me?
From Lestrade. Seems Cream tried to obtain some more strychnine.
No.
Chemist in the Vauxhall Bridge Road. Lestrade wants you to meet him there.
What on earth for?
You're the medical man. No doubt he needs your expert opinion on some matter.
I see. Well, yes, I'm sure I can point him in the right direction, as it were.
If you don't mind, then?
Oh, not at all. How's the leg today?
Oh, no problem at all.
Good. I just thought all that activity last night.
No damage done, I assure you.
Well, glad to hear it. Yeah. You better be off, then. Be as quick as I can. Expert opinion, eh?
A moment. I'm in. Ah, Mrs. Hudson. Surely it can't be lunchtime already.
Not yet, Mr. Holmes. You have a visitor.
Indeed.
Mr. Ian Mercell.
Ian Mercell? With 2L, of course.
I don't know about that, but I've got a feeling.
That you've seen him before?
That's right.
I'm sure you have, Mrs. Hudson. Show him in, please.
This way.
Thank you. Good day, Mr. Holmes.
Good day to you, Mr. Mercell. Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Very good, sir.
I have the impression I've been expected.
Lestrade would have sent a cab, not a telegram.
And you obviously realize it was better that I see you without Dr. Watson being present.
I agree that my colleague would be more inclined to indulge in some physical act of aggression against you than I.
May I sit down?
Please do. The far chair.
Certainly. But you need have no fears for your safety, I assure you. Besides, I see you have your sword stick to hand. I've no doubt you know how to use it.
What is the purpose of your visit?
I've come to congratulate you, Mr. Holmes.
Really? You were hardly in such a generous mood on the last occasion we
met. That was last night. A good night's sleep has helped me to form a different picture. You're clever, Holmes. Damned clever. Of course, there was no danger of your catching me last night, but I had the feeling that were there to be similar occasions in the future, and should Lady Luck happen to be smiling on you, then I could be in danger of losing my liberty.
What exactly are you saying?
That I enjoy a challenge, but I prefer the odds to remain firmly in my favor. England is a small country. Where I am concerned, you make it even smaller. I am moving on.
So, you admit defeat?
Hardly. I still have my liberty.
Not for much longer, I assure you.
You played from a weak hand, Mr. Holmes. Perhaps in time. But I feel discretion should be the better part of valor. Which is why I have decided to move on.
To where?
The continent. It offers two distinct advantages. More room and no Sherlock Holmes.
I should feel flattered.
You may feel whatever you please.
And yet I find it difficult, if not impossible, to believe you.
That is no concern of mine.
I think you're running away.
Hardly running, Mr. Holmes. I shall catch the boat train whenever I please.
With only two successful poisonings.
I have no regrets.
And one failure. Your efforts in Looper Street hardly do you credit, Creighton.
A temporary setback. Nothing more.
Hardly a setback. By your own admission, a somewhat pathetic end.
Why, Mr. Holmes, I do believe you may be trying to persuade me to stay.
On the contrary, if Looper Street is the best you can do, I, for one, will be glad to see the back of you.
Have a care, sir. I came here in all good faith. I would prefer to leave that way.
You may leave any way you choose. The sooner the better, as far as I'm concerned.
I will not be provoked, Mr. Holmes. I have the greatest respect for your abilities. And have no doubt you have enjoyed the intellectual pleasure of our dealings as much as I.
Intellectual pleasure? You flatter yourself, Cream. If those pathetic anagrams of yours are the nearest you get to intellectual pleasure, your mind must be even more diseased than I thought.
I'm warning you, Holmes.
I can think of no better time for you to leave for the continent, as there is no doubt in my mind that should you attempt to continue in this imbecilic, amateurish way, you will have as good as put the hangman's noose around your own neck. Or you'll end up in the lunatic asylum, which is undoubtedly where you belong.
You pay for that!
One step further, Cream, and I shall put a bullet right between your eyes. Exactly, my friend. A sword stick needs mobility. A revolver merely a steady hand and an excellent eye. And I assure you, I have both.
You wouldn't dare. Not here.
Perhaps you'd care to put that to the test.
That would be murder.
I hardly think the destruction of vermin would be considered a capital offense.
Very well, Holmes. Now listen carefully.
I should prefer not to listen to your ranting scream. Just close the door on your way out. There's a good chap.
You pay for this, Holmes! I swear that within 24 hours, you'll wish you'd never heard of my name.
For heaven's sake, Holmes, we have to talk about this. For my own part, I don't mind being sent on some wild goose chase. But when your very life is threatened by this madman, the least you can do is take it seriously.
Oh, really? Holmes, you might stop your fiddling when I'm trying to talk to you.
Fiddling, Watson? I may only have paid 55 shillings at a broker's in Tottenham Court Road for this instrument, but it is a Stradivarius. However, although I am perfectly willing to conduct our conversation in this delightful manner, obviously you are not. There, Watson. You have my undivided attention.
Pleased to hear it.
Well?
Damn it all, Holmes. The man has threatened your life.
Better my life than some innocent person on the other side of the channel.
But you don't seem in the least concerned.
On the contrary, I am most concerned. I simply refuse to let it deprive me of my pleasures. Few though they may be.
But surely, I mean, don't you think we should inform Lestrade?
The last person I would inform of my present predicament. Lestrade has many admirable qualities, but the subtle art of giving protection without advertising his presence is one which, alas, I fear has passed him by.
But you can't just sit here and wait for Cream to make his move.
Can you suggest a more comfortable place?
Well, you may not be concerned for your own safety, but I can assure you that there are those amongst us who do care. Care very much indeed.
My dear Watson. Good, faithful friend. My only real concern is that my actions may put at risk one I hold in the deepest esteem and affection.
After all we've been through together, the least I can do.
But as I know neither when nor where my adversary will make his move, I have no alternative but to endeavour to keep my spirits up.
Put on a brave front, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Well, I suppose it's for the best.
And even better when one has eaten well. So, if you'd be good enough to open the door for Mrs. Hudson, I fancy I hear her step on the stairs.
Yes, of course.
Bearing the supper tray, I trust.
Must say, I'm feeling a bit peckish myself.
Dr. Watson, you made me jump.
Sorry, Mrs.
Hudson.
Perhaps I can
manage, thank you. It'd be a shame to drop it now.
Is that game pie I see, Mrs.
Hudson? It is.
Excellent. And the cup that cheers, too.
Well, I don't know about that, but this bottle comes with Mr. Lestrade's compliments. Come this afternoon when I was out.
Very generous of him.
I'll put the tray down here. I'm sure you can do the rest, Doctor.
I'll take care of our patient, Mrs. Hudson. Don't you worry about that.
Then I wish you'd hurry up and get him back on his feet again. I've lost count of the number of times I've been up and down these stairs in the past 6 weeks. Must have worn at least one pair of shoes out, to say nothing of a linoleum.
You see, it's all your fault, Watson. I knew you hadn't been taking care of me properly.
Anyone who has you for a patient, Holmes, deserves a medal.
At the very least. Now, we have some serious business to attend to. Let me see the cook.
I don't know why you don't just look at the label.
A wine label is merely for confirmation of one's sensory analysis. There would be little point in developing an acute sense of smell if it were not to be put to the test from time to time. Now, let me see. Well, now, a claret, of course, but undoubtedly an aristocrat.
Yes, possibly. A year?
All in good time, Watson. We must start with the grape. 70% to 80% Merlot, and... Ah, yes, Boucher for the balance. Now, that tells us immediately we are not merely in Bordeaux, but at the very shrine of claret. Pomerol itself. Chateau Petrus, of course. As for the year, another 12 months and it might well have faded, but right now... 15 years of perfection. 1876. Am I right?
Of course.
Then I claim my reward.
Eh? Oh, yes. Of course. Didn't know Lestrade had such good taste in wine. Very generous of him. Must have cost him a pretty penny. There you are, Holmes. Holmes?
What? Oh, yes. Thank you.
Well... ours is not to reason why. Here's to Lestrade.
And Chateau Petrus.
No!
Holmes, what's come over you?
I should have known, straight away.
Known what?
That neither Lestrade's financial situation nor his taste in claret extends to Chateau Petrus.
Well, perhaps not, but knocking the glass from my hand like that, I mean...
Even though it contains such a deadly vintage?
Deadly?
The inevitable result of mixing Merlot, Boucher, and Nux Vomica, the St. Ignatius bean, or any other variety of the Lageniaceae family.
Strychnine.
The very same.
But who? Neil Cream.
Certainly the only person I know insane enough to molest the noblest claret of them all. And he was good enough to reassure me of his intention to point out the error of my ways within 24 hours. He's been as good as his word.
Strychnine.
I shall have to analyze it, of course, but I should be most surprised if my diagnosis were to prove incorrect.
But I might have...
Precisely, Watson. Or, more importantly, from Neil Crean's point of view, I should be the one who, even now, should be gasping my last breath as the poison took its deadly hold.
But all's well that ends well. No harm done.
All is well, yes. But hardly the end, Watson. In fact, merely the beginning of a long night's work.
Really... what had you in mind?
My demise.
Good Lord.
At this very moment, Neil Cream undoubtedly believes me to be as good as dead. A misconception I feel we can turn to our advantage.
What did you have in mind, Holmes?
My obituary, Watson. After which, you and Lestrade will visit Victoria Station to make preparations for Mr. Cream's imminent departure to the continent. But first... I must prepare a sketch of a certain piece of apparatus for the only person in London who would undertake a commission of this nature at so late an hour. Jeremiah Fogg in the Whitechapel Road.
As I had a long night ahead of me, Holmes insisted I eat as much of Mrs. Hudson's game pie as I could comfortably accommodate, while he hastily prepared the documentation I would need to carry out his various commissions. My first call had been Scotland Yard, where I left a message for Lestrade to contact Holmes as a matter of the utmost urgency, after which my conversations with such Fleet Street editors as were still at their places of work established that their morning editions would carry the headlines that Neil Cream was undoubtedly awaiting with considerable eagerness. My third task brought me to that part of London that will forever be associated with the terror of the so-called Ripper murders. The dimly lit streets, the impenetrable menace of the maze of alleyways that lay behind them, and above all, the unaccountably threatening atmosphere that always descended with the darkness. It was not without some trepidation, therefore, that I left the comparative sanctuary of my cab and proceeded down a narrow passage, at the end of which I would find, or so my driver had assured me, the premises of the man Holmes had sent me to see.
What do you want?
Jeremiah Fogg.
And if I am?
Then I have a commission for you.
Come back in the morning.
Please, Mr. Fogg. Open the door. I must speak with you.
I told you to come back in the morning.
The job is urgent. It must be done tonight.
Not by me, it won't. Now look what you've done. Get up here. Go on, get out of here.
I come from Sherlock Holmes.
Do you now? Said so straight away.
Well, I had.
Come on, get inside. Hold your world knowing my business.
Oh, yes, of course. I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
It's better. Just you, me, and the dog. Now, what does Mr. Holmes want?
He made this drawing for you.
Give us it here. Ah. Yeah, I see. That should be all right. Come back in an hour.
I'd prefer to wait, if you don't mind.
Suit yourself.
An hour, you say?
Yeah, about that.
Very well, I shall wait in the cab. Wait, sir. Perhaps you would like payment in advance.
Oh, there's no charge. Not for Mr. Holmes.
The hour spent waiting in the cab was one of the longest of my life. I am not given to exaggeration, although I would admit to the occasional embellishment when chronicling some of the adventures Holmes and I have shared, but the threatening nature of that particular part of our great metropolis unnerved me to such an extent that I occasionally called out to the cabby to reassure myself that I was not entirely alone. But having eventually collected a small package from Jeremiah Fogg, I was much relieved to find myself once more in the sanctuary of our Baker Street rooms, where I found Holmes instructing Lestrade on the precise part he was to play in the events of the next day.
There you are, Watson. Oh. Lestrade and I were just thinking of sending out a search party for you.
Oh, quite right, Mr. Holmes. I mean, Doctor. Gentleman at your disposition, out by himself at 1 o'clock in the morning. Well, anything might have happened to you.
Say, steady on. I know how to look after myself, you know.
Of course you do, Watson. And for my money, there's no one I'd rather have by my side when danger threatens.
Oh, dear chap.
And make no mistake, we play a dangerous game. A game which should be resolved tomorrow, one way or the other.
We'll be ready for him, Mr. Holmes.
I don't doubt it, Lestrade. Now, Watson, I presume the package you carry is from Jeremiah Fogg.
Yes.
There you are.
Good. A queer sort of cove.
Well, they do say 10 years in prison can affect one's personality.
Prison? Well, you didn't tell me he'd been in prison.
We mustn't hold a man's past against him, eh, Lestrade?
Oh, indeed not, Mr. Holmes.
You don't know what he was sent down for?
Let me see now. Some sort of assault charge, as I recall.
Robbery with violence, surely.
With some grievous bodily harm thrown in, I shouldn't wonder.
Good Lord.
That's some sort of grievance, as I remember.
Grudge against the whole medical profession, I think.
Yeah, always swore he'd get even.
You didn't say you were a doctor, did you, Watson?
Well, no, I don't think so.
No, couldn't have done.
Wouldn't be here now if you had.
Good heavens. Do you mean to say that... Oh, you don't think to say that. You don't think you would.
Oh, I see.
Yes, most of you think.
My dear Watson, my dear friend, please forgive me.
Nothing to forgive, is there? I can take a joke as well as the next fellow. No, don't worry about me.
Please, Watson, we were laughing at the situation, not at you.
Yes, I can see that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. So, what's in the package, then? A kosh? Razor? Something like that?
Far from it. Jeremiah Fogg is a master craftsman, a glassblower of extraordinary ability. Behold his latest creation.
So that's what I went for.
To do with one of your chemistry experiments, is it, Mr. Holmes?
Close, Lestrade. In fact, Fogg has fashioned much of the apparatus you see on my bench over there.
Yeah.
No. These two glass tubes and the minute bridge that connects them have been designed to help bring a murderer to justice.
Really? Well, I'm dashed if I can... How's he going to do that?
Well, unless I'm very much mistaken, all will be revealed tomorrow morning. Or rather, this morning. Time you were off to Stroud.
Oh, right.
You too, Watson.
Where are we going?
Victoria Station. You're quite clear as to what has to be done, Lestrade.
Perfectly, Mr. Holmes.
Good. And remember, it's almost certain to be the 9:30 boat train.
Yeah, I'll make sure everything's ready. Come along then, Doctor. We've got a busy night ahead of us.
Very well. I suppose I'll be told what's going on eventually. What will you be doing then, Holmes?
Me? I shall be in my bed.
Oh, will you now?
Yes, indeed. If my next meeting with the Pimlico poisoner is to be our final encounter, which will, of course, depend on the effect of the headlines in this morning's newspapers, then I shall need all my wits about me. Good night, gentlemen.
Excuse me, Constable.
Yes, love?
I was wondering. That is, you see, my eyesight isn't what it used to be, so I don't read the newspapers anymore.
Yes?
But I overheard some people talking, and, oh, do say it isn't true.
Well, what's that mean?
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, they said he was dead.
Fried so, love.
Oh, no.
Looks like the work of this Pimlico poisoner again.
Oh, how dreadful. Poor Mr. Holmes.
There's a lot of folk that are missing.
Yes, indeed. Oh, now what am I going to do?
Now, you mustn't go upsetting yourself.
No, it's not that. I have a train to catch, you see, and I seem to have mislaid Victoria's gate.
Platform 4, change at Ashford.
Thank you so much.
Right. Where to, madam?
Oh, I have my ticket already.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear that, madam. Is there something else I can help you with?
It's my sciatica, you see. And I do have this bag to carry.
If you care to call a porter, madam, you'll get all the assistance you need. Next, please.
But there doesn't seem to be a porter available.
I'm sorry, madam, but as you can see, I am...
You would be so kind.
I'm sorry, madam, I can't leave the office.
Then perhaps your colleague, the young man sitting in there with you.
No, I'm afraid he's not free either, madam. Now, if you would kindly stand aside, there are people waiting for tickets.
But surely your friend wouldn't mind helping me. I'd be so grateful.
I'll take her to the train. You'll never get rid of her otherwise.
Thanks, Sergeant. Who said our policemen are never there when you want them? There's someone coming round to help you, madam.
How kind.
So if you could just step aside, there are other people waiting for tickets.
Oh, I'm so sorry. How a thought, Sergeant.
Right then, which platform?
The boat train. This is most kind of you.
Glad to be of service. Now, I'll take your bag. There we are. And if you'd like to take my arm.
How charming. Thank you so much.
Off to Paris, are you?
Not if I can avoid it.
I take your... What the... Good heavens. Mr. Holmes.
Not so loud, Sergeant Woodthorpe. I'm supposed to be dead.
I know, sir, but... I mean, why are you dressed up like that?
I know of nothing better to disguise the fact that one's leg is cased in plaster than the voluminous folds of a lady's skirt. Although I do admit to an aversion to wearing all the other garments that complete the ensemble of the opposite sex, particularly this somewhat ridiculous hat.
I don't know, Mr. Holmes. It rather suits you.
That will do, Woodthorpe. Tell me, is our man on the train?
He is. Like you said, sir. We told him there was only a private carriage left.
And he took it?
Didn't give it a second thought.
Lestrade and Watson, are they ready?
just like you instructed. Tickets, please. Have your tickets ready, please. Have you got a ticket, Mr. Holmes?
My bag, please.
Hey? Oh, yes. There we are.
Now, where did I put... Ah, oh, yes. Here we are.
Thank you, madam.
And one platform ticket. He's my nephew, you know.
Thank you, madam. Have your tickets ready, please. Four tickets, please.
Thank you, Auntie.
Enjoy the relationship while you can, Woodthorpe. I'm sure Inspector Lestrade will be anxious to know you have played your part in the appropriate manner.
Quite, sir. Begging your pardon, sir, how should that leg of yours?
The sciatic or the plastered one?
The one in plaster.
I'm certainly looking forward to sitting down in a first-class smoker for an hour or two.
This coach, sir. Third compartment down.
The door, if you would be so kind.
Good luck, sir.
Aren't you going to say goodbye to your aunt, Woodthorpe?
Oh, yes. Take care of yourself, Auntie. Have a good trip.
Thank you, dear. And make sure you're a good boy while I'm away. Good morning.
I'm sorry, ma'am. This is a private carriage.
Oh, now, I don't object to your smoking, but do open the window a little.
I repeat, ma'am, this is a private carriage.
I'll just pull down the blinds on the corridor side. And then no one need wonder why an old lady has her leg in plaster, her feet on the opposite seat.
And can't wait to take off the ridiculous hat she's wearing.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Holmes. You had me completely fooled.
As obviously did the headlines in this morning's newspaper.
Yes, indeed. A masterly stroke, but... forgive me, I fail to see what you hope to gain from this little charade of yours, albeit so admirably performed.
My dear Cream, it's a simple matter of redressing the balance. You got the better of me in Looper Street. I can return the compliment at Victoria Station.
Of course. I should have expected nothing less from so worthy an opponent. We're about to leave, Mr. Holmes. Forgive me if I let an old lady find her own way onto the platform.
The next platform on which I intend to alight is that of Dover. You don't think I could allow such an illustrious adversary to leave these shores without showing my appreciation of an intellect which, though I am reluctant to admit it, comes near to matching that of my own.
Praise indeed. For my part, Holmes, I welcome the diversion your conversation will provide on an otherwise dreary journey, but I warn you, if you have subterfuge in mind, have a care. I am in no mood to be trifled with. Although, even you must now have accepted that there is no evidence against me, and no legal reason why I should not leave England in the manner in which I arrived, a free man.
Regrettable, but true. Now, as I have forced my company on you, I feel I must provide some of the diverting conversation you have so generously ascribed to me. There is one story you may find particularly amusing. It was a case I investigated a few years ago on behalf of Lord... perhaps he had better remain incognito. Now, originally, I had been called in to establish the whereabouts of a distant relative with whom his lordship was anxious to renew his acquaintance. But my subsequent inquiries revealed a very strange circumstance. Evidence I had was the fact that the incorrect grade of lubricating oil had been applied to the flight. His lordship was generous enough to admit I was right, and paid my fee there and then.
So there was no missing relative?
And no crime. Although, I do feel that the caprices in which certain members of our aristocratic families indulge themselves should be dealt with by a stiffer sentence than mere expulsion from their clubs.
Capital, Holmes. I should have loved to have seen his lordship's face when you showed him the empty bread bin.
It was rather amusing. Oh, that reminds me, Cream. Talking of bread bins, a toast. I thought we might drink to the recent skirmishes we have enjoyed, in which neither of the best men won.
I doubt if the dining car could supply a vintage worthy of the occasion. Perhaps a dope.
Yes, I anticipated that. And I took the liberty... Yes. Here it is. Of bringing a bottle that may just live up to your expectations. Admittedly, not quite as noble as the one you sent round to me last night, but
Nevertheless, it should suffice.
Come now, Holmes. You don't seriously expect me to drink from any bottle of wine.
You produce? And surely you don't expect me to be so naive as to attempt to deceive you by using your methods. Apart from which, I could never bring myself to adulterate the contents that such a distinguished label proclaims.
You know, I almost believe you. I'd certainly like to fit an end to our relationship.
Nothing would please me more. But, as you obviously require more substantial proof of my motives, we will first remove the cork. I should have opened this earlier, of course. And then somewhere... Ah, yes. Here we are. Two of Mrs. Hudson's very best glasses. There. Now, the colour, magnificent. The bouquet, oh, superb. And the taste, oh, words fail me. Do you know, Cream, I should be rather pleased if you did force me to keep this bottle to myself, though
would I still be able to negotiate the platform at Dover?
All right, Holmes, you win. I'd be happy to drink with you.
I'm very pleased to hear it. There.
Thank you.
I drink to a master.
And I drink to the world's greatest consulting detective. Your health, Mr. Holmes.
And yours, Mr. Cream.
You're right. A splendid wine.
Then let me refill your glass.
Thank you.
So, you moved to pastures new.
Indeed. I've always dreamed of going to Paris.
You realize that Inspector Lestrade will be sending details of your recent activities here to the French authorities.
I expect nothing less.
I have a mind to advise him against it.
Now, why should you wish to do that?
Well, quite simply because I'm not entirely convinced you are what the more sensational elements of our popular press have come to refer to as the Pimlico poisoner.
Really? And what has led you to that conclusion?
Well, the fact that we have no proof. Not one shred of evidence to link you with these murders. Apart from your sojourn in the Illinois State Penitentiary, which did, as I recall, start with the illegal use of strychnine.
True, you have no proof as far as Lestrade is concerned. But between you and me, surely no proof is required. We both know.
Well, that is my dilemma. I'm not sure that I do. Not for certain.
Why?
Let me explain. Suppose, just... suppose, mind you, that you are not the murderer, but you were so fascinated with the crimes that were baffling the police that you decided to capitalize on their inability to solve them by embarking on an intellectual duel with myself.
Hardly likely.
But perfectly plausible.
Then tell me this. Why did I take the place of the police coachman in Lupus Street that night?
Sheer effrontery. Also to make me believe that you were the murderer. I must say, you very nearly succeeded.
All right. How did I know exactly where to be that night? How could I have known an attempted murder would take place at exactly 10 o'clock?
Yes. Yes, I thought about that. I can only conclude that not only did you set up the false alarm at the far end of the street, but you also persuaded another young lady to scream at the top of her voice 10 minutes later.
Nonsense!
Not only that, you also paid her enough to make up some... cock and bull story about a large man with whiskers and a bottle of white liquid.
Make no mistake, Holmes, I am the Pimlico poisoner. And if it's proof you want, listen very carefully to the following facts. Facts that did not appear in the newspapers. Alan Dodsworth, 19, yes, but born in Bradford, not Leeds. 4 months pregnant at the time of death. Orphan, Matilda Clover, music hall artist. Favorite food, oysters. Favorite drink, champagne. Father, a lighterman. Brother, a waiter. Mother, dead.
How'd you know all this?
Because they talked to me. They talked to me. Before. Before I made them drink.
And what did you make them drink? Whiskey? Gin?
I made them drink from my bottle.
Which contained?
Strychnine. So now do you believe me? Or do you need further proof?
No. I think that should be sufficient.
All right, Watson, Lestrade, you can come in now.
What is this? What are you doing?
Making you feel better. They do say confession is good for the soul.
This won't work, Holmes.
We shall see. May I introduce Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard, Dr. Watson, you know.
Neil Cream, I arrest you for the murder of Ellen Dodsworth and Matilda Clover.
Do you now?
It is my duty to warn you that anything you say...
I've heard all that before. On what grounds are you making these charges?
Your confession, Mr. Cream.
It's my word against yours, Holmes.
And that of Lestrade and Watson.
Really?
Are they prepared to perjure themselves?
Not at all. They overheard every word you said from the next compartment.
Every word. Clear as a bell.
Both of us.
Come, gentlemen. You stretch my patience too far. Apart from the noise of the train, there are two seats and a partition to prevent you hearing one single word.
I think not. If you please, Lestrade.
Certainly, Mr. Holmes.
Behold, the next compartment. No partition, no second seat to muffle the sound. Well done, Lestrade. And you too, Watson. A splendid night's work.
As I was saying, you are not obliged to say anything.
You really believe this will stand up in court?
Three against one? No longer simply my word against yours.
But the word of three people whose reputation demands they put someone on trial for the Pimlico poisonings at any cost? Why, any defense lawyer worth his salt would have your testimony thrown out. And you know it.
I admit there is some element of risk in sending you to trial on the evidence of your confession alone.
Risk? You'd be laughed out of court.
Which is why your dying deposition will carry much more weight.
Explain yourself.
A dying deposition, or a statement taken from an accused man when he believes himself to be near to death, is regarded in law as a valid testimony. Is that not so, Lestrade?
Well, yes, Mr. Holmes, but I hardly think...
Even better when recorded by a priest, of course, but with the good doctor here.
I admire your tenacity, Mr. Holmes. Why, I'd even like to oblige you by giving you one of those dire depositions. However, as I have no intention of breathing my last for many years to come, I must forego that pleasure.
We shall see. Watson, One glass of wine taken from a bottle containing 1/5 of a grain of strychnine. How long would you say? 30 minutes?
Less than that. 20 at the most.
Which leaves you about 10 minutes, Green. 10 minutes in which to come to terms with your conscience.
You really must be desperate to expect me to believe this bluff of yours, Holmes. We drank from the same bottle. I doubt if even you would make the supreme sacrifice to prove I am a murderer.
Heaven forbid. I have far more important things to do. But let me show you something. A perfectly ordinary bottle on the outside. But when I put my finger down into the neck... Ah, yes, there we are. Not quite so ordinary on the inside. What was the trade of Jeremiah Fogg, Watson?
Glass blower, wasn't it?
Master glass blower. And here we have the perfect example of his art. Two slender glass tubes connected at the bottom and bridged at the top, and one of them blown into a small bowl. And of exactly the right dimension and delicacy to pass through the neck of the bottle, but to remain unseen to all but the most astute observer. Ah, I see I have your attention, Mr. Cream. Let me explain. Before inserting the apparatus, I filled it with a glass of the claret as it left the chateau. Naturally, that was the glass I drank. But the second glass, the contents of which now rest in your stomach, Mr. Cream, was unfortunately tainted by a certain substance with which I believe you have more than a passing acquaintance, to wit, strychnine.
You may wish to speak to Inspector Lestrade now.
Kill you for this, Holmes.
I'll kill you!
Stop him, Doctor!
Get his other arm!
He's too strong for me.
He's choking Holmes to death.
The bottle, Doctor. Hit him with the bottle.
I can't reach him.
You'll never take me alive. May the devil take the lot of you.
You better. Can you get the door shut, Mr. Park?
I'll try.
Are you all right, Holmes?
Holmes!
I killed him, Watson. I sent him to his death.
You have indeed, Mr. Holmes. Had I known, I'd never have let you take the law into your own hands like this.
But surely he was a dead man as soon as he drank the wine.
A bottle of Montbusquet may well take away one's breath, but never permanently.
Do you mean there was no strychnine?
Precisely.
But all that stuff about the glass and Jeremiah Fogg,
it worked rather well, didn't it? Too well.
Oh, come, Holmes. You can't blame yourself for the death of a man like that, a murderer.
Can't I? I cheated him by making him think he was dying. He cheated me by taking his life into his own hands. I killed him, Watson! I will never forgive myself for that.
What do we do now, Lestrade?
I'm not quite sure, Doctor. I've never pulled the emergency chain before.
Here we are, home sweet home. Come on, old chap. Ah, Lestrade.
Yes.
Mrs. Hudson let you in, did she?
Well, perhaps I should have waited down.
No, perfectly all right. Just in time to welcome home my ex-patient. In you come, Holmes. Show us all how well you can walk now.
Really, Watson? I would prefer not to be treated like a four-year-old.
Good morning to you, Lestrade.
Morning, Mr. Holmes.
Now, I think you can make it to the chair by yourself?
For pity's sake, Watson, if this is a sample of your bedside manner, I shall be careful never to display any symptoms of whatever ills befall me in the future.
I've had to endure all these weeks, Lestrade. What a patient.
Well, I'm sure it must be a great relief to you, Mr. Holmes. Getting that plaster off, I mean.
You will never know how much. Now, what brings you to Baker Street?
Well, I seem to have come just at the right time. You being back on your feet, as it were. That is Scotland Yard have need of your services again.
Excellent. Delighted to hear it. Like to keep busy. Anything to keep my mind off that depressing business yesterday.
Well, this could well have something to do with yesterday's business.
You'd better tell me about it.
Well, sir, after the train stopped and I'd organised the coach to take you and Dr. Watson back to Ashford, Woodthorpe and I and some of his men, we searched the line for his body.
And?
We didn't find it. As you know, the London train passed us just after we'd stopped, so I thought the body might have been pushed down the line a bit.
Well?
We covered 5 miles, both sides of the tracks. No sign of him.
But he must be there. Probably rolled down the embankment, lying under a bush or something.
Well, that's what I thought, sir. Sergeant Woodthorpe and his men are still searching.
Then I don't see how I can help, Lestrade. I may have had my plaster cast removed this morning, but even I would not be so foolhardy as to go scrambling in and out of the undergrowth looking for Neil Cream's body.
That's not what I had in mind, Mr. Holmes. You see, we had a report in from the Kent Constabulary this morning. Well, more a request for assistance, you might say. Seems they had a murder last night. Young lady near Ashford. Poisoned. It's strychnine.
In The Adventure of the Pimlico Poisoner, Sherlock Holmes was played by William Chubb, Dr. Watson by Crawford Logan, and Neil Cream by Peter Harlow. Inspector Lestrade was Terry Malloy, Mrs. Hudson, Tina Gray, Sergeant Woodthorpe, Chris MacDonald, and Constable Billings, Alex Jones. Jeannie Thompson was played by Kimberly Hope, Jeremiah Fogg by Roger Hume, and Matilda Clover by Susan Mansell. Holmes Stradivarius was played by Roger Coole. The Adventure of the Pimlico Poisoner was written by Peter Mackey and directed at Pebble Mill by Nigel Bryant.